Thank you, Professor Sausen. We're running slightly over, but I think this is an opportunity for you, the participants, perhaps to ask some questions at this point. I think we've got sort of 5 or 10 minutes in which we can spare. So if anybody would like to ask a question, please raise their hand. I will point you out, and then if you would press the red button underneath your desk and wait for the light to come on. And at that point, if you could also say your name and where you're from, that would also be helpful. So do we have any questions from the floor? No. Oh, there we are. We have one towards the back there in the middle. Can you press?
Yes.
Your light is on.
Hello, my name is Karl-Heinz Hack from Lufthansa. I have a question to Robert Sausen. You've shown a chart about the NOx production of different transport modes, and you mentioned that you have assumed that for road transport some technology progress is part of your analysis means that catalysts would reduce NOx emissions to a certain amount or to a large degree. Question is, have you taken into account technology progress in other transport modes too, especially aviation, to that issue?
Need to press it. There we are.
Yes, this has also been considered. However, it's would be quite difficult to introduce a catalyst in an aircraft engine, at least of the conventional style we are doing it now. So it's basically all this has been introduced, which has been the standard of aviation industry, which is foreseen so far. With cars, the catalysts are already available. It's only a question whether you how large they are put into service, and the regulation is already available in Europe and in North America, and similar things are now happening in Asia, so there will be this reduction will occur quite rapidly.
Another question in the middle there, please.
Same. May I specify that a bit more in detail? So you have not taken into account technology development like low NOx combustors that might come up in the next years?
No, this is not included. If aviation would come up with this, and if they really would be able to do this, then it could be included. But maybe you can David can better respond to this.
Sorry, I'm going to contradict you, Robert. yes, we did incorporate the NOx technologies on a kind of both a business as usual development of improving over time, and we also produced an Akari based scenario as well on one of the growth scenarios where we we assume that Akari is fully achieved in terms of NOx and CO2, and it's taken up into the fleet in a rollover model and achieved in a certain progression of time. So that is buried in there. The details of how we've done that are in this environmental science and technology paper by Bethan Owen and colleagues and myself.
Do we have it? We have another question there towards the back.
Thank you, Ian Jobson, representing Kanso. Thank you for four very interesting presentations. I have a question about, really it's a question for clarification on the contrail issue. What I didn't get from what the speaker said was whether you have absolute clarity on the trade-off between CO2 and contrail avoidance and the extent or where that trade-off is likely to lie and what the size of it is. Is it correct that you're not clear on that yet?
This trade-off between CO2 and contrails is indeed a difficult issue. But I think we have clear indications that the potential to reduce climate impact by reducing the contrails is far larger than the potential that by the same time we have an increase of CO2. So I think the balance is towards contrails.
That's an interesting question. Would somebody else like to answer that one as well?
I'd just like to add that the ratios that we presented are an expression of that, the trade-off between contrails and cirrus and fuel burn. So you can actually look at that table and make that assessment as to what the range of scientific uncertainty is. And I think the point stands that if we can have a best estimate for the contrail and cirrus effects, let's assume that we have that, then it's solely influenced by the extent to which you value long and short-term effects, which is also something that, you know, reasonable people could agree, you know, come to an agreement on.
Professor Schumann? Sausen, yeah. Beg your pardon.
Maybe I
need to press the button.
Maybe I can add something to this. Avoiding contrails normally means that you do not have to change flight altitude dramatically. It would be changing flight altitude for instance, going from flight level 350 to flight level 360 or 390. So, and you know that this is, of course, has some impact on the fuel burn, but the impact on fuel burn is something in the range of a few percent, while the change in contour is something like 80% if you do this.
Do we have any further questions? Up the left, my left, towards the end.
Okay, my name is David Zing. I'm from the University of Toronto in Canada, and my question is sort of a generalization of the previous one. So all of your presentations were very interesting and informative, and I agree with you, Ian, that reasonable people can agree on a discount rate, say. But until they do, what advice do you have for the aircraft design community in dealing with trade-offs? So if you broaden it just from contrail cirrus versus CO2, but to include NOx. So we can change altitude, and it'll have an effect on CO2, fuel burn, and NOx. We can look at engine designs that where one goes up and the other goes down. So until we have some sort of a consensus, what is the engine and aircraft design community, what do you recommend to the aircraft and engine design communities?
Well, as I said, I think particularly my personal view is to take a long-term view of CO2, which, you know, as David presented, I think is appropriate, which puts you someplace in the range of relatively high value for CO2 and low value for the other things. But once those things can be defined with a best estimate, I think it's appropriate at that point to start doing the engineering trade-offs and to evaluating, you know, what the value is of changing flight routing and things of that sort. Relative to NOx, there's already incentive to drive down NOx for surface air quality concerns, among other things. And one of the things that we lose in our models that I mentioned is that when you simplify to a globally averaged effect, you really sort of lose a strong contribution from NOx, though it depends somewhat on what results you take from the literature. So I guess in sum, my advice would be to continue to focus largely on CO2, and then as soon as we have some consensus around a best estimate for contrails and cirrus, to look at those trade-offs and see what could be done.
Yes, Professor Schumann.
I would like to add to that. I think we have to distinguish between two situations. One situation is a situation of strongly growing air traffic, and the other situation is that of steady state air traffic. If you would be in a situation of steady state air traffic, then CO2 would be the only and highest priority, because that is a long-lived effect. But as long as traffic is growing, the short-lived components are more important than CO2. And as long as it's growing, we have to take care of that with highest priority and really ask ICAO to do that seriously. And I think the contra issue is the strongest short-lived effect. And I agree that we do not yet understand all details, but we do understand enough to really address that quickly and strongly. Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for one last question, I think. In the middle again, please.
Again, Karl-Heinz Haag from Lufthansa. I hate to contradict Professor Schumann and Mr. Sausen, but as being a company who was involved with a certain fraction of work in analysis of, let's say, operational options to avoid contrails, I must say from the knowledge that I have from the data that we have, you might probably be able to say there is a chance and there is a need to look in changes of flight operations a bit more detail, but there is no clear evidence from my point of view, because we have two small databases, to say there is a clear way forward. And that's what I want to put out here to say there's more need for research before you can come up with a decision or any clear vote in going into one or the other direction. And I have a question to Professor Schumann about carbon dioxide. I find a slight mismatch in what you are saying. If you split or divide aviation in, or look on aviation in two different options and scenarios, saying if you have a steady state operations or steady state aviation transport volume, then the long-term effects would be more important compared to a growth scenario. Isn't it the case that even if you have a growing scenario, you have a cumulative effect of carbon dioxide, which on the long run is even more important and more dominant than the short-term issues that you just mentioned around NOx and cirrus clouds?
Okay, Professor Sausen.
Find a slight break in your argumentation there.
That's something which can be rather ruled out. You have something which is decaying with some short-lived effects with some decay rate. What if this decay rate is outraged by the growth rate of emissions due to growing transport? You can overcompensate this. This was one of the things which we came by chance out of the IPCC 99 report, where we by chance only had exponentially growing emission scenarios. And in that case, if you have a growing scenario, the impact of the short-lived always will dominate the long-lived, unless the growth rate is very small, something substantially below 1%. And if you look for the future forecast aviation scenarios, you always have growth rates which are in the range of a few percent. So if you don't do something about this, you come automatically in this problem that the short-lived species dominate. And if you then do something about CO2, say by replacing part of the CO2 by CO2 from carbon neutral resources, then the effect is even larger than in the traditional kerosene case.
Okay, just one final comment from Professor Waits.
I'd just like to add that that's an example of where looking at a physical metric like temperature gives you a different answer than if you look at the ultimate metric that matters, which is damages. And when you look at damages, because they grow exponentially as the surface temperature increases, the marginal effects of short-lived contributions from aviation do grow, but they don't grow as strongly as you would find if you looked only at temperature. So I would say that still you end up with modest growth rates in the short-lived to CO2 effect. And in fact, in the backup charts is a chart that shows that analysis. So.
Okay. Just one final comment then from Professor Schumann.
I just want to say if it works. Karl-Heinz Haag, he is one of the few experts here in the group. He's really dealing with this in detail. So his comment was very important. I agree that we have not yet understood everything here in this field, and there is lots of work still to be done. But the basic physics is very clear. I mean, for steady-state traffic, the non-CO2 impact is constant. But for steady traffic, the CO2 impact is growing. So in the steady state, CO2 is important. But for the growing case, there's no question that the short-lived components are the most important ones. And that's our present situation, that's the situation for the next 50 years. And because we want to have growing traffic. And since we want to have growing traffic, we have to address the non-CO2 effects with highest priority.
Thank you. Just to remind you that all the presentations you've seen this morning, all the slides, will be posted on the ICAO Colloquium website after the event. And again, the biographies of the speakers should be on the ICAO Colloquium website already. We're now going to, I'd just like to conclude by thanking the four panelists, Professor David Lee, Ulrich Schumann, Ian Waits, and Robert Sausen. Thank you very much for your contributions. And perhaps we could all thank them for their time.